This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
It's like covered with plants. Some of them are very, you know, common. Some of them are rare.
At this small nursery in Boyle Heights, business is thriving as much as the lush green plants that pack shelves and hang from the ceiling.
A lot of our customers are first-time plant parents.
Andy Soch is the owner of Latinx with Plants, and she's showing us around the forest green storefront that she opened in 2020. Well, here in Boyle Heights, a lot of small businesses worry about whether they can stay in the neighborhood because of gentrification pressure. But this story is not about a business getting priced out. Quite the opposite. In fact, Soch is actually on track to become a part owner of the building where she rents space.
I think for me, being a young brown woman of color, it just means it's like monumental for me to be able to even have that idea to that I could possibly own commercial property is insane.
Soch is participating in a new program that aims to keep local businesses in their neighborhoods, even as prices rise and demographics change. KCRW's Megan Jamerson is here to explain how it works. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Steve.
We really do tell a lot of stories, don't we, about businesses getting priced out of LA neighborhoods. Are Andy Soch and others worried about displacement, too?
Yes, the short answer is yes. I cover small business, and a lot of the owners I talk to in LA are very aware that they are vulnerable to displacement. And in a place like Boyle Heights, where Soch is, all it takes is for a developer to come in and buy a commercial building and raise rents to push these locally owned businesses out. So now there's this growing movement across the country, actually, to change how we think about businesses owning the spaces where they operate.
I think it's important to sort of shift the narrative around commercial property ownership being foundational to entrepreneurship and to stabilizing businesses more broadly, that it's not just like something that rich people do.
Willow Lung Aman is an urban planning researcher at the University of Maryland and the executive director of the Small Business Anti-Displacement Network. And she says when locals own businesses, they tend to care more about the neighborhood because, well, they live there.
He or she is really invested in the neighborhood in a way that if you're getting a large commercial chain, a Starbucks, an Amazon, The workers may be invested in the neighborhood, but the owners ultimately aren't.
So Soch is a great example of someone who comes from the community, who really cares about their neighborhood. She grew up in Boyle Heights and is the child of entrepreneurs. Her parents worked as street vendors. Her dad was a taquero and her mom sold tortas at soccer games. So she really sees this act of owning commercial property along Cesar Chavez as a way to preserve her neighborhood and culture.
I thought that if I opened up this business here, I would be contributing against gentrification, which is one of the main reasons why a lot of people have been displaced. Without these small businesses, we lose, you know, our identity, and essentially Boyle Heights will turn sadly into a gentrified, whitewashed neighborhood if we don't do anything about it.
Megan, if having local people own businesses in a neighborhood is important, I mean, how do you do that? For most small businesses, it's pretty hard just to be an entrepreneur in the first place.
Yes, you're exactly right, Steve. But the model to achieve this co-ownership is actually pretty simple. So this project called Community-Owned Real Estate, they're based here in LA, they bought the building where Soch rents now. It's this corner property, bright green, and it's a single story and has three commercial spaces. It used to be a Smart and Final grocery store, but after the renovations, it's home to Latinx with Plants, a candy store, and two nonprofits. And the idea is after the building loan is paid off in about 5 years, the program is going to offer tenants the opportunity to share ownership of the building on these favorable terms, which means there will be no sudden rent increases and no corporate tenants willing to pay much higher rent. And all the tenants I spoke with were really into this idea. One of those was Las Fotos Project. It's a nonprofit where teenage girls and other youths can learn photography. The executive director there is Lucia Torres.
To be able to say both, I am on a path to ownership in a place like this. And also I am spiritually, culturally, creatively inhabiting this space and owning this space and like taking up a space where our voices have historically been silenced is so super important. So important.
So is this just one random building on Cesar Chavez? I mean, where is this experiment happening?
There's actually five buildings that are part of this program, again, that's called community-owned real estate. There are two in Boyle Heights on Cesar Chavez, two in unincorporated East LA, and one in El Sereno. And combined, these buildings have about 20 tenants. And the program was started by three local nonprofits, and one of those is called Inclusive Action. The executive director over there is Rudy Espinoza, and he says when they invest resources in helping entrepreneurs like Lucia Torres, it's going to have a bigger impact than just helping this one entrepreneur.
For her, we know that it's not only going to be about her, she's going to bring her whole community with her. You know, I would want to bet on the person that's not only going to grow a strong business, but they're also going to plant the seeds for other businesses and other entrepreneurs in our neighborhoods.
And to be clear, the nonprofits involved in this project, they didn't make up this idea of community property ownership. So they were inspired by a movement in the housing space, which is this community land trust idea. It's something that's been tried out on residential properties in places like South LA.
Okay, so you're saying this group of nonprofits, as you say, they bought the properties and then they're going to help tenants buy in 5 years?
Yep, you got it.
So where did these nonprofits get the money to do this? I mean, we all know property in LA is so expensive.
Yes, it is. But they used a tax credit in 2019 to buy these properties and also got some help with a loan from another nonprofit lender called Genesis LA. And Espinoza says that they would like to see this model of co-ownership replicated across the region. But as you can guess, the biggest challenge is capital and the very competitive real estate market here.
So how's this going in Boyle Heights then and in East LA? Is everything on track, Megan, so that they'll be able to pay off their loans? Is it so far so good?
Yeah, things look really good so far. Espinoza says they are on track to pay off the initial $5 million loan to buy the buildings. And tenants like Torres are just really thrilled to be able to do this because otherwise, you know, she's a nonprofit. She wouldn't have been able to afford this location. And plus, the stability it offers is really important.
And there's also no fear of having them just kind of like pull the rug from under you and to say, oh, well, there's somebody who came in and just wants to buy the building. Sorry, you know, you're a nonprofit organization. I'm sure you're doing good, but, you know, sorry, so sad. So, but to be able to have the guarantee that you're, you know, amongst friends is great.
Well, it seems for now, it seems like it is working out, and I'm glad you brought us the story. KCRW's Megan Jamerson, covering business of Southern California. Megan, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
We're glad you're with us at KCRW on our new time for Greater LA, Monday through Thursday at 2:30 and 6 o'clock. And we're hoping you're enjoying the new programs we premiered this week as well, such as Forum, which is a statewide show, Today Explained from Vox Media as well. If all that means something to you, how about making a contribution, a donation to support those programs and others? Our spring pledge drive is underway. There are new programs, new merchandise featuring our new KCRW logo, all at the website, by the way, that you can see. What is a spring-like thing, like everything new? Everything's new, so we're happy that you're with us during this week of new programming. Go to kcrw.com/give and be part of something bigger than yourself. News, music, and culture on KCRW. kcrw.com/give, and thank you. Coming up on this program, the motive in the Orange County church shooting that happened over the weekend, how Taiwan and China factor in. That's yours next on GLA.
Lately, there's a lot to keep up with. Choosing KCRW as your go-to source means you'll get the latest balance of news, music, and cultural coverage from diverse voices. So stay balanced. Donate now at kcrw.com/give.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Over the weekend, the country saw multiple mass shootings, one of which horrifically took place right here in Southern California. On Sunday, a gunman entered a Taiwanese church in Laguna Woods in Orange County, killing one person and injuring five others. In his car, investigators found divisive writings about the conflict between Taiwan and China, and the FBI has opened a federal hate crime investigation, though much still remains unclear about the motive behind the attack. Well, Southern California is home to large Taiwanese and Chinese-American communities, and here to City Council Member Peggy Huang. Council Member, thank you for being with us today. I'm so sorry for the loss there near your community.
Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you so much to you and members of the public for supporting our community and praying for us through this difficult time that we're still processing.
We certainly are. Yeah, we're all still processing this. It's been a difficult time for sure. You know, if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about the Taiwanese American community here in Southern California. Is it a large community? Are there particular areas where there are a lot of Taiwanese Americans?
Sure, it's a very big community. We used to be more concentrated in the Monterey Park, Alhambra, San Gabriel Valley area, where a large percentage still live there. And Monterey Park used to have the distinction of being the Little Taipei back in the 70s and the early 80s. But since then, you know, it has progressed further to Roland Heights, Hacienda Heights, which, you know, had the distinction of kind of becoming the second Little Taipei. But now pretty much in Irvine, Laguna Woods, South County, there are pockets of Taiwanese Americans all over. And Northern California, a big concentration in the Bay Area as well.
It's being reported, Council Member, that the shooter's writings pointed to strongly held beliefs about a one China policy, which basically claims that Taiwan is Chinese territory, not its own independent democratic country. Obviously, that is very different than what Taiwan and the United States say. That is an issue we hear a lot about in China and on the global stage. I mean, how important is it to local Taiwanese Americans who hear that?
Well, for second or third generation Taiwanese Americans, who grew up here or born here, we're a little bit more removed from that, of course. So it's more important to, you know, probably our parents or those who live in Taiwan, the idea of Taiwanese independence, or whether you're for one China. But it is a topic that's discussed among the immigrants, and you'll see it in the papers. What does it mean to be one China rule, and what does it mean to be, you know, a Taiwanese independence? Those conversations do occur. But really for second generation and third generation Taiwanese Americans, it's not something that we necessarily have involved ourselves into, unless, you know, people like me who take a particular interest in studying the issue and understanding the issue. But in general, I wouldn't say it's something that's on their mind.
I know tensions between China and Taiwan have definitely ramped up just in the past few months. We certainly have seen it since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Russia saying that Ukraine is part of its original territory, a part of Russia. And China, of course, has been maintaining that Taiwan is a part of its original territory, that's a part of its country. Has this been a topic of conversation in the community?
It's always present because Taiwanese Americans who live in America are very concerned about the security of their loved ones, the relatives who live in Taiwan, many of us with ties in Taiwan. And, you know, China is famous for, you know, having live military exercises in the Taiwan Strait, in the Pacific Ocean near Taiwan. And so it is a topic of concern among, you know, Taiwanese Americans when they hear about the live military exercises because they're concerned about the safety of their family members and whether or not, you know, you would have this accident, accidental, you know, bombing of a place. That's always a concern. And what China might use that military power later on in its relationship and diplomatic relationship with the U.S. and Taiwan.
What are relations like between Chinese Americans, mainland Chinese Americans, and Taiwanese Americans?
You know, our experiences and just talking to many other, you know, second and third generation Taiwanese Americans are similar to mine, where we have great relationship. Many Taiwanese Americans and mainland Chinese Americans have, you know, married to each other, friends. So it's very friendly. You know, in America, you know, we're a community and we get along with each other. And we leave that tension to, you know, DC politics or, you know, overseas politics, but not here locally.
You've been pointing folks to a GoFundMe for the victims of Sunday's attack. Are there any other ways that the people here in Southern California can help?
The GoFundMe right now was set up to help the victims and their families, especially with medical expenses, things like that. You know, and also Dr. Chang's family. And that's been our sole focus. We've been asking for a lot of prayers, and the members of the congregants have asked for just a little bit of some peace and distance because they're still having a hard time processing. I mean, they've gone through a traumatic event, and so they appreciate a lot and very thankful for all the support, the prayers from members of the public, but they're asking for a little bit of space right now just so they have a chance to you know, really process has happened.
So difficult. I want to thank you for coming on and talking to us about it. I really do appreciate it. Yorba Linda City Council Member Peggy Huang, thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The City Nature Challenge just wrapped up, and the results are in. Across the globe, thousands of folks took part in this crowdsourced science project of people who took pictures to chronicle the wildlife that they saw. Well, naturalists from all over the world helped to identify the species in the photos, which will give us a better picture of who or what lives in ecosystems across the planet. Leela Higgins is the Senior Manager for Community Science at the Natural History Museum of L.A. County, which organized the challenge along with their friends over at the California Academy of Sciences. Leela, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve, for having me again.
This year, L.A. really turned out, I mean, more than 18,000 observations of wildlife, 2,500 or more species were identified by 1,400 observers. Listen to those numbers. I mean, what are some of the most common animals observed this year?
So this year, the most commonly observed species was the western fence lizard. And for those of you who are like, western fence lizard, what's that? It's that lizard that you see with the blue belly that you can sometimes have them, you know, they're doing push-ups. So that lizard, that's the one that was most commonly seen.
Wow. All right. So what about rare or endangered species that were identified? Are there any of those here in Southern California?
Yeah. So in our LA County, we over 600 observations of rare or endangered species were found. And the one that I found the most interesting when I was looking through the data was the a live forever plant. It's also known as the Santa Monica Dudleya. It's a type of succulent plant, so you might be familiar with succulents in your garden. And it only lives in a few of our local mountains and literally nowhere else in the entire world. So they're listed as threatened under the California Endangered Species Act, and that's because this plant is actually getting poached for the houseplant trade. So if you see one of these live forever plants, these Dudleyas, don't purchase it. They should be in the wild. Don't bring it into your home or garden.
Don't bring it into your home or garden. Okay. What was the most surprising species that somebody caught on camera?
Well, I actually was there for this one. We had an event at William S. Hart Park up in Santa Clarita, and someone took a picture of a blue pill bug. So it's not a pill bug that's been painted blue. This pill bug actually is infected with a virus, and it's a type of virus that turns the pill bug from its regular kind of grayish color to this kind of purplish blue. And that's because the virus has a crystalline structure that when the light refracts off it, it causes our eye to see a very blue color. So that counts as two species, not just a pill bug, but also the virus.
Y'all have been doing this for a little while, Leela. I mean, what do the results say about species that are in the county? I mean, is the biodiversity of LA changing? What have you seen over the years? And what are you seeing this year?
Yeah, so this is the seventh year we've done the City Nature Challenge in Los Angeles. There's a lot of data that's been collected, but we don't have ecologists on staff at our museum. And so we haven't actually done that data analysis of tracking that change over time with City Nature Challenge data. So if you are an ecologist and you would like to work with us, we are so open to that. The thing that I love about iNaturalist and the data that we collect for City Nature Challenge is it's all open source. So literally anyone can download the data. If you're a kid doing a school project, if you're a teacher wanting to do a segment on science, you can download City Nature Challenge data from LA County, and also scientists from anywhere in the world can download it. So it's really open source and available. And now that we've been doing it for 7 years, we definitely want to start looking at how this it is changing over time in the LA area.
This used to be a competition, Leela, between LA and San Francisco, but now the challenge apparently has gone global, as I mentioned at the outset. I mean, how did that happen? How did it expand so big?
Yeah, so we started off 2016, LA versus San Francisco. That next year in 2017, 16 cities across the US, and that word of mouth just spread. And then in 2018, just 2 years after we'd started, 68 cities from around the world wanted to take part. And now we're up to 445 cities. And it's really just word of mouth on organic growth. We haven't like paid for anyone to like or done advertising for this. It's just all based on this is happening. People who have jobs like me who work at museums or nature centers all over the world are like, this is what I want to do. I want to do this with our local people. And so it really is just meeting a need that's out there.
Well, it's always an exciting thing. And we love talking to you, Leela Higgins. If you want to check out, by the way, all of the species in the 445 cities that took part in this competition, you can check out citynaturechallenge.org. We'll have a link at our website as well, kcrw.com/GLA. Leela Higgins, Senior Manager for Community Science at the Natural History Museum of LA County. Leela, thanks.
Thanks so much.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, some folks see tiny houses, just small buildings that are basically bedrooms for sleeping, as solutions to a housing and homelessness problem. But are they really a panacea or just a small, literally small way to get people off the streets and out of tents and tarps? That's tomorrow on Greater LA. Online always at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us what you're thinking. Suggest a story idea. Even subscribe to the podcast. All easy to do at our website, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. And how about throwing us some bones, too, during our spring pledge drive, too? Jenna Cagle, Rebecca Ludman, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Michael Stark, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made this evening's show happen. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A reminder, 2:30 and 6, Monday through Thursday, for Greater LA on KCRW. Have a great night.